the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast on the CBP Media Network. Len, this is number 89 weeks we've been getting together, ignoring our spouses for the better part of 2 hours and talking about things that matter to Bitcoiners. My name is Joey, and I'm curious, buddy, my co-host with the most, how are things going over there in your neck of the woods? What's going on? What's the good word?
It's good, Joey. Everything is all right. That's a very good weekend, pickleball. Hit Rosedale Tennis Club. It was a very good weekend. How could you go wrong with that? So living the semi-retirement dream right here. So if anybody has any questions, what it's like to be semi-retired, I'm the man to answer your questions. So yeah, how are things over there, Joey? You're prepping for your big trip, I presume?
Yeah. It's been a busy day. Tomorrow will be even busier. Trying to clear some stuff up at work, obviously. Doing some stuff around the house, obviously. And then Wednesday, yeah, we're out of here. So yeah, busy, but...
Where are you going? Land?
I'm going to Jamaica. My wife and I and another couple are going over to Jamaica for
everything is Ari.
Yeah. So my brother's going to be doing some work around here with the pets, which is great. And then, I'll be back just in time for Redskins Giants or Commanders Giants, which was just flexed to Thursday night, the day I get back, basically.
Is that an Arena League game?
No, that's going to have playoff implications. I can't believe I'm saying that as a Commanders fan, an HTTR fan.
What's a Commander? I remember the Hogs. I remember the Skins winning many a Super Bowl, but I don't know what the heck this is. The league has gone downhill.
On one of the broadcasts the other day, like yesterday. That's what they, Redskins. I know.
I mean, I'm not sure. I haven't watched that league in many, many years. And so I'm not sure when they changed the name, but I'm sure people still have it ingrained in their head that they are that name, right? Yeah. The Skins, right?
It's gonna be good. And then so that's Thursday I get back. When do I get back? Wednesday or Thursday, I forget. But my brother is a kind of half, you know, Skins fan too. So like I said, he'll be at the house. I think he's gonna be, you know, interested in watching that game. And then me and my buddies got tickets, unbelievably, in the lower bowl to Bills Dolphins, and that game got flexed to Saturday night, 2 days later. That's
peak fiat right there, ladies and gentlemen. So you're witnessing Joey go into the fiat world, not just dipping his toes. No, he's doing a cannonball right in that pool, and he's going to be bathing himself in that fiat environment. Excellent stuff.
I can't wait. Anyway, look, before I get shit on too much more, my block clock's off. There was a power outage here yesterday. I forgot.
I had the same thing. I had to just unplug it, plug it back in. You're good to go. If you do it right now, you'll be all right. So I'll give you a little bit.
Okay, do the housekeeping. I'll do that.
Well, so we'll start off with, I have a few comments that were left for us on Fountain. Thank you for everybody that have left a comment for us. And I recommend anybody just listen to us on Fountain. And also, there are other podcasts that you listen to on Fountain. You might as well just get some Satoshis simply by listening to your favorite podcast. So I'll name off a few of the comments. Just want to thank everybody that have left comments. So number one, we have F33 Nix, and he listened to our episode with Ray Blanchard. And he says that thermoelectric generators to handle that excess heat, no noise, just heat to power. That's a very interesting way of trying to deal with the heat. So that's I like the outside of the box thinking. We also have Progressively Worse. He says 5 out of 5, keep up the great work, guys.
Great handle, Progressively Worse.
Bitcoin plus food. Hey, 300 days of sun per year. Innate rental mindset. Alternative thinkers suspicious of the state that's in Spain, especially Catalunya. And this is ripe for the business model where you could set up some solar panels, mine Bitcoin with that energy, and you could give a big FU to the state. Also, Al Cool J says what Ray Blanchard is doing is inspiring. Great episode. And we have Norman Remnant. He just always writes in, we're fucked. I never get tired of Joey explaining how fucked we are. I like that. And a late entry, we have Joey's Achilles. I'm not sure what you're writing in. He says, some people listen to rock and roll when they work out. I listen to Len Rolling Downhill. We are not the same. Hashtag lights out. Hashtag blackout king. And hashtag adrenaline. I like that.
Adrenaline. I saw that on Twitter today. That's really good. That is really, really good. Whoever made that up. That's really good.
Well, Mr. Achilles did it. So, I mean, maybe you could just look down if he's down there.
Hey, at least that thing is doing something. Over here, it's not doing much. I haven't played football in a couple of weeks. Been too busy. Now I'm not going to play for another few weeks, it looks like. So.
Oh man, that's not because of injury. It's just because of self-inflicted.
I've been great. I gotta say, I think I've played like 4 or 5 games this indoor season. I don't know. I must have like 11 or 12 touchdowns. I score like 2 or 3 times a game. I've been blowing the top off of defenses for 15 years in that league. Okay, and then
you are the Henry Ellard of beer league football in Hamilton. He was a great football player, by the way.
It ain't stopping anytime soon. I'm good.
Don't Henry Hood went until late 30s, I believe. He was just a machine, just kept going.
The only difference, Len, honestly, that I think about, like obviously I got hurt playing basketball after a lockdown, which was partially my fault.
The first time. It was the first day the gyms were open.
I know. Think. They weren't even open yet. It was the day before. And yeah, exactly. And apart from that, no, I mean, I recovered pretty quick from everything. Proof is in the pudding, baby. Come see me. I'm out there. No problem. You can ask around. Ask about me. They know. Anyway, so look, what's the price of Bitcoin today? What do you got in Canadian dollars?
$23,067.
Worth about $16,976.
Just under the 17K mark.
A little bit of a drop from 17.2, I think, last night, right? I think when the weekly candle closed, we had a bit of a pump. And then we've kind of steadily, wow, that was really rude, dropped off today. I think the NASDAQ also gave back some of the gains it had pre-market and early day as well. So, we're correlated. We know that. We don't know what the exact correlation is, what the nature of it will be going forward. But I feel pretty good about that price, man. It's kind of holding still. And I know, I'm not going to bring it up during the show because I didn't have time to do the extra research that I want to. But I saw Willy Wu today talking about the HODL floor. That if you look at some of the on-chain metrics, we've talked obviously on this show about the number of Bitcoin coming off of exchanges since the summertime, only ramping up in the last week or so, 2 weeks after the SBF FTX stuff. It looks to him like there is a case to be made that the HODLers are setting the floor and buying up dips at a level they've never done before. Could be because more of us are willing to put more money in. Could also be because there's just more of us. I think the number of wallets with between 0.1 and 1 Bitcoin is as high as it's ever been, which is exactly what you want to see. That's perfect for us, man. So I'm not going to bring it up on the program, but it's a good time to mention it that we're crushing, man. You got to feel good about your role in establishing a price for Bitcoin. So strong hands make high prices. Let's keep that up.
Hyper Bitcoinization. That's what we're looking for. And then at that point, we could throw away the price. It doesn't really matter what it is in comparison to the US dollar. We'll just price everything in sats and move forward. Joey, there's lots to talk about. There's lots of clown world financial news to talk about today. But before we dive into that, do you want to briefly talk a little bit about the Forex currency with the FX swap? Did you see what is going on there? This thing it's a real doozy from what I could see here.
Talk to me about it. This is the sort of quote-unquote off-book indebtedness that exists. I think something to the tune of, what was it, 70 or 80 trillion globally?
That's a number.
Swap. Yeah, so I think the gist of that, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, this is something I think we've talked about before. Maybe we weren't quite as competent back then, but I think this is basically that all debt is denominated basically in USD, but it's protected or hedged or expressed via the swap market. And the total basically indebtedness on the swap market is 80 trillion. I don't know if you have more to say than that, but I'll just, before I kick it back to you, the one thing I would say is I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago that I thought the way to describe this and the way I'm going to try and describe it more after this sort of story broke, I guess, yesterday or today, the risks in these markets, whether it's crypto derivatives, lending derivatives, or dollar denominated debt derivatives and swaps, the slogan is the risk is unknowable, period.
Print that shirt.
There's too much. There's too many vehicles, too much opacity. It is impossible for the average person. It's even impossible for some firms, obviously, like we've seen over the last little while, to know exactly what the level of risk is in these markets and in these intentionally obfuscated derivative vehicles where people are gambling and degenning all sorts of different levels of stuff, whether it's volatility swaps, whether it's bond swaps, whether it's US dollar denominated debt swaps and hedges. We talked before about the repo market. The number of moving parts here that complicate the plumbing of the global financial system is growing by the day. And it's growing because there has to be a way to wash what's very clearly a system starting to show cracks, right? These are thumbs in holes in the canoe, okay? Since we're a Canadian show, Len, we'll say that. I don't know if you have anything else you want to add to that. I think maybe you know a little bit more about it than that. I'd be curious.
I've learned a little bit about it today, and I'm far from an expert by any means. But the number that they're throwing around, and you quoted it, $80 trillion.
It's really 80, not 70. 80.
80 trillion. To be perfectly honest, what's the difference between when you're talking 70 and 80 trillion? $2 trillion
between friends.
You're talking about a number that not even the Federal Reserve could back. It could fix and print away the problem. It's such an astronomical number that it's hard to actually comprehend. In fact, I have a quote here from Reuters. It was reported today from them. And the number that I'm throwing out here, the 80 trillion, it's higher than the stock of dollar treasury bills, repo and commercial paper combined. That's how much we're talking about over here.
Wow. And
so what I suspect is if one of these foreign currencies, if they get rug pulled, this could cause a cascade effect and cause us to have some real issues. And well, then pension plans may be jeopardized and who knows. So I was theorizing this yesterday, something like along these lines. And I'm going to just go on this tangent. What we experienced a couple of years ago in the markets, that was something that was forcefully pushed upon us. They closed the economy and then we had the markets pull back as a result. That was not a natural occurrence that the markets tend to have where they just have positive gain for so long and then eventually has to pull back. You know, something breaks in the system like you had in 2008 or the late 90s, etc. So we didn't have that this time around. This foreign currency swap problem, this could be the problem that should have happened this time around. We're still waiting for that problem to come out, the natural problem to come out from this whole cycle, because we haven't had this. We had something forcefully put upon us. That could be the straw that breaks the camel's back here. And that's something I'm very worried about, because this is cyclical. These problems come up in cycles. And we're now 14 years due for one of these. Something's going to have to come up, and it's not going to be something that's going to be forced down our throats. It's going to be something that just happens naturally. Not to say that this is a natural occurrence, but within the framework which they set up, I would say this is a natural problem that is created, and it's a natural problem which can create some real issues for everybody. Just food for thought. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Joey?
I think that's a really good point. There hasn't been a true quote unquote, you know, product of the system blow up. I think that's what you're getting at, right? These things have a natural end, and the COVID thing wasn't, it's not quite a natural end. There's going to be a natural end that's going to be significant that's yet to come. I like that framing. I think you're right.
Yeah. So the COVID problem that existed, that was manufactured by policy. And we haven't had something like, you know, taking that out of the equation, we're still running a 14-year bull market, relatively speaking. So something's going to happen. But anyways, let's move on, Joey. Let's just move on. Unless you want to talk anything more about this, because this is something that's rapidly developing and it's hard to grasp the...
You know, we're probably less than 6 months away from doing half an hour on that subject anyway when someone goes belly up. So may as well just wait.
You know, we should have a pool of which currency is going to be the one that goes tits up first. I'm calling the yen. That's mine. But I'm sure everybody else will be calling the same thing. But anyways, let's move on. We've had some signals coming out this past week from the Federal Reserve, and Jerome Powell was actually saying that the Fed could move at a slower pace when raising hikes in December. And this pivot or potential pivot has been talked about and predicted for quite some time, but just don't start the pivot party yet. We should have a pivot party when it does happen, because the Federal Reserve, Powell, was saying that they still have, quote, a long way to go, end quote. And this is for reining in the rising costs. Really, what this means is they're going to try to achieve, I believe, a 2% target or 2% goal. That's what ultimately is what they're trying to achieve here. And when we talk about that, a 2% goal and a 2% target with respect to rising costs, what does that really mean? It's kind of this fabricated, almost like utopian number that fiat maximalists love to achieve and like to present to us. What does that really do, though? And if you think about it, I think that it just makes the people that are closest to the central banks, they're able to operate and benefit from the creation of new wealth through fractional reserve, through creation of debt, you name it. And ultimately, that creates them a lot more wealth, and people in the poorer side of the spectrum, they are suffering as a result. And also, the middle class continually gets squeezed out. So this whole 2% thing, it's something that's manufactured for the wealthy to get even more wealthy at the expense of everybody else. But everybody else doesn't really tend to notice this problem. It takes a long time to see it. You look at it over a period of year, 2% means nothing. But over 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, you look at it, it's like, wow, something has changed here. And you lost essentially most of your adult life to this slow but progressive inflation of 2%. And what did you have to gain out of this? Very little. And people that are closest to the money printer, they're the ones that make the most gain. So when they talk about this 2% goal, it really isn't the magic number. It's just something that they're creating, and it's there to make the people that are closest to them the most money. But anyways, I digress. And it looks like there's going to be some expectations in 2023 that they're going to continually raise rates. And if they do that, and if they continue to raise rates, this is going to have a real impact on a number of different things. Number one will be the job creations. We'll also have the servicing of debt, both public and private. The housing market, that's going to also take a real beating. The automotive sector. Fuck, Joey, did you hear about this one? Even sex workers are going to have some problems with rising rates. Did you hear about this story, Joey? Things are going so bad out there. I know this is in Kenya, so it's not really a United States thing, but see, you know, anything that happens there could float over here too. There's a condom shortage in Kenya. And what's that causing over there? Well, it's forcing sex workers to reuse their contraception. Imagine that. Imagine looking at somebody's backyard instead of having their gitch out there drying in the backyard. No, it's fucking condoms as they've been reused. That is absolutely insane. Luckily, it's not, you know, it's not hit the shores here in North America. So people that are taking advantage of those services, you're safe for now. I'm using that term loosely, safe too. But yeah, that's what's going on over there in Kenya. But back to America, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, we heard about them a lot in 2008. Well, they have announced they're going to be backing mortgages over $1 million in certain scenarios. And this effectively is raising the loan limits to record levels. They'll be starting to do this in 2023. It's the first time that there's going to be government-backed mortgages that are over $1 million. And this really goes to show you how difficult it is to attain and buy a home. And it also shows the real costs associated with home ownership. And it's a hard asset. It's something you could touch. It's something you could watch appreciate. And it's going up in value. So with this move by the government, that's now more exposure to more debt that the collective may have to pay should things go really, really bad in the future. Another one, I'm not sure if you saw this one, but Joe Biden has made it illegal for rail workers to strike. There were threats that they were going to strike just days before the holiday season. And this is would have a devastating impact on the economy, currently under pressures with what they say supply chain issues. I love that supply chain issues thing. There's some nameless, faraway thing that's causing us all these problems. But anyways, let's go back to this railway strike thing. It's estimated if the strike did happen, it was going to cost the economy $2 billion with a B dollars daily. I could see that being reality. And the workers, they were essentially holding out for paid sick leave, but it looks like it's not going to happen. They just made it illegal to strike. That seems a very tough way to do business, but it's just the reality of what we have right now. But also some interesting news. We had Amazon. They had reported their biggest Thanksgiving shopping weekend that generated more than $1 billion in sales. So is this really a recession? Well, let's take a look into this. Consumers were spending an average of $325 during the weekend on holiday-related purchases, and that's up from $301 from last year. Doing the math, $301 to $325, that's only an 8% increase. To me, that's a CPI. So
matches inflation. Yep.
It matches inflation. So Amazon didn't make anything. If anything, that's a tie or an overtime loss in hockey, depending on how you want to frame it. But it's only 1 point. Don't frame it as a W. And we also had the job numbers. They came in. And 10.33 million vacancies were for the month. And that was for the month of October. This is a decline of 353,000 from September, and also 760,000 down from compared from a year ago. So this might give some fuel to the Fed's fire to continually increase the rates to try to cool the market. But really, this doesn't make sense to me, because I'm reading a lot of stories of layoffs. We had DoorDash. They laid off 15% of their workforce, 1,250 people. Kraken also released 1,100 of their staff. Twitter, they let go of a whole bunch of stiffs. Bybit laid off 250 people. Amazon and Google also let off a whole bunch of people. So are these job numbers, are they accurate or are they fudged? Because the unemployment rate, they're saying, remains unchanged at 3.7% in October. Sorry, in November. But I don't know what the hell's going on here. But anyways, we can move over to Germany. And over there, well, the most populated state over in Germany is called North Rhine-Westphalia. And the government overseeing this area, this state, they're seeking $5 million in loans to address, quote, exceptional emergency, end quote. This is as reports from local media. Why? Energy crisis. I don't know. I don't know what this, who could have predicted this? They're now they want to have a 5 billion euro loan that's going to address this exceptional emergency. So really, they're going to be borrowing or printing money as a way to get through this winter. Oh, and they're also, as a way to get through the winter, they're also making deals with Qatar. Not sure if you saw this one, but German firms, they announced a 15-year contract to buy up roughly 2 million tons of LNG per year from Qatari natural gas, which is interesting because only a few months ago, the German chancellor was here in Canada, and he came here with a visit with hopes of securing Canadian sources of LNG. And he was here and he quotes, "As Germany is moving away from Russian energy at warp speed, Canada is our partner of choice. We hope that Canadian LNG will play a major role in this," end quote. So really, he came here with the intention of getting our LNG. He wanted it. We have it. But our prime minister quoted, never been a strong business case, end quote, for Canadian LNG exports to Europe. Really, we dropped the ball here. We had an opportunity to sell our energy to Europe at the market rate. We would be able to provide energy to one of our allies and hopefully have them go away from Russia and to get more into North American energy. But we dropped the ball. But anyways, we could shift focus. And we talked about the mess and we talked about the financial markets. That's really a mess. But the one thing that I just want to touch upon just really quick is the clown news and the possibility we had the biggest scandal in history, in American history. And we had this all revealed after Elon Musk bought up Twitter for $44 billion. Who the hell is really talking about this? This is the stuff that should theoretically make political heads roll and careers ended. The whole system should be reformed because you can see what's going on here. This is a Stalinesque type system where people are being shut out from the Twitter world, sent off to Siberia, and their tweets are never seen or heard of again. That's what we had here. It's absolutely insane. It's not being talked about. But I'm going to end it on with this one last thing, because this is a Bitcoin show. We should talk a little bit about Bitcoin. The European Central Bank says Bitcoin is on, quote, road to irrelevance, end quote.
I love that. I love it.
Yeah. They say the recent price stabilization is this past week was due to, quote, artificially induced last gasp before the road to irrelevance, end quote. And they say Bitcoin is not suitable as an investment. It does not generate cash flow like real estate or dividends like equities, cannot be used productively like commodities or provide social benefits like gold. The market valuation of Bitcoin is therefore based purely on speculation. I love it. I love it. These guys are shaking in their boots. And we just continue to just buy up Bitcoin, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show. And I'm going to end it right there.
It's so funny. Friend of the show, Preston Byrne, had a great tweet on the day that ECB paper came out that Bitcoin would actually be reading the Euro obituary. 10 years at the funeral. It's funny, you know, like we spent a lot of time talking about FTX and the nature of the FTT token and how that flywheel works. It's funny when governments and central banks talk about cash flowing assets, they're just paying you in their native token. There's no value, right? It's the same scam. Cash flowing assets doesn't matter if no one wants the cash. Now you can just print as much as you want. It's amazing that they're going to come down with legislation that outlaws exchange native assets. 100% they're going to do that. but they're doing the same thing and everyone's starting to catch on. And that's why they got to write papers. Thou doth protest too much, as the saying goes. So I'll try and be brief here since I know we got a lot to talk about. The Brookings thing with Powell, those meetings that are not FOMC related are generally optional meetings. So a couple of places I saw talking about this. One of them was Looney Hour, friends of the Looney Hour. For him to go to that meeting, I think is telling. He doesn't have to do that. He's presumably busy. Talked about how he rides his bike to work. Maybe he wants to spend some time outside. It's not that cold out yet. So I would imagine there's a lot of things he'd rather be doing than talking at Brookings, but he goes. And when he goes, he speaks rather dovishly, I think. The market reacts. It's like a 3% up day. Most of the market, Bitcoin reacted as well. You know, we're starting to hear more and more, and this is not news to people who watch this show and who follow markets, but, you know, I'll say it as a reminder. We're starting to see more and more that there's discussion about slowing the pace of rate hikes. It's everywhere. It's here. It's there. Europe is not quite there yet, but they will be soon. And there's also talk more and more about what really is the desired rate of inflation. 2% has started to lose its luster a little bit in academic circles. And that will, I think, you know, naturally or unnaturally make its way to real economic decision-making circles and policymakers. And I expect that they'll settle on something higher than 2%. You mentioned unemployment and the numbers that came out of the States. It's funny. Zero Hedge had a great tweet the day that they announced the unemployment numbers. And it said, as long as they hire, you know, 500,000 waiters and waitresses, they should be fine. Do you know how many waiters, waitresses, bar staff, et cetera, were added on that report?
Half.
225,000.
Well, in terms of numbers,
they added about half. So they added.
It's a country full of waiters and baristas.
The American dream is asking if you want fries with that. I don't fucking think so. Okay, the American dream is not asking whether you want your Caesar spicy or normal. The American dream is not asking if they want double cheese, red wine. The American dream is not handing somebody a machine that starts with the 18% tip and goes all the way up to 35 or whatever the fuck those machines say now in the service industry. That is not the American dream, but you're being told that it's the American dream. There's another thing you touched on that I want to just, you know, mention or add some color to. This idea that the inflation rate has to come down to 2%, right? We talked about this a little bit in the past, talked about it tonight. Jeff Gundlach makes a really good point about this that I think not enough people are talking about. Certainly, I don't hear enough people talking about this. And my, you know, podcast feed, Twitter feed, all the news I take in is saturated with this kind of stuff. And I don't hear people talking about it except for Gundlach from Double Line. And he says all the time that all these guys do is oversteer. That is the nature of their endeavor. Whether it's too tight, too loose, it doesn't matter. They're always going to miss the mark wide. And he makes this point that, you know, part of the way to get inflation down to 2% is to, as we talked about before, and as Powell has said, you know, this is a quote, you need to increase the level of pain, basically. Pain means a number of things. It means higher expenses for everyone. It means less jobs. It means less consumption, blah, blah, blah. The jobs one, I think, is really key. And so does Jeff Gundlach, because as he says, if you're oversteering all the time and you need the jobs number, you know, the unemployment number to reach a certain threshold, let's say you want to get to 4% or 3.5%. If the velocity at which you are raising rates and trying to destroy demand is so high that you drop inflation from 9% to 2% inside of 2 years, you're going to oversteer. And your inflation number may drop to 2%. Fuck, it may even go lower. But the problem is that if you hit that number because of all the actions you took, the severity with which you enforced and applied those levers will cause unemployment to jump to 6%, 7%, 8%. There's no doubt. And because those indicators are lagging, they will once again be in a position where they have to cut too much or ease too much or print too much or whatever. And they just are in this cycle they can't get out of. And I'm not saying that there's like this, you know, the end of fiat is nigh. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know, okay? I do not pretend to know these things. I don't think any of us should. But it is fair to say that more and more people are calling into question the mechanisms by which these policies control or try to control economic outcomes, try to round the corners of the business cycle, for example, take the sharp edges off these ebbs and flows in the market. I keep hearing that the stock market is not the economy, but it seems pretty clear to me that every Federal Reserve governor and anyone with a microphone who has any, you know, even tangential relationship to economic policymakers speaks publicly, tweets, whatever, as soon as the market goes up 3 or 4% in a day. It happens every time. It happens every single time. So they may tell you the stock market is not the economy, but they don't actually think that. They do think it's the economy. So that's another thing to keep in mind. It's funny listening to you talk about Biden and the rail strike thing. And as far as clown world, think about this. You know, we're probably less than a year removed from Biden telling everyone to stay home if they're sick and, you know, winter of death and destruction, whatever that quote was a year ago. You know, this guy was advocating for sick pay for the duration of his election campaign. He's been advocating for sick pay as a leader of the global superpower. And now he's legislating that rail workers can't go on strike and instead have to go to work sick, presumably. Is that the line I'm supposed to draw? These people don't care about you. Okay. We've talked about this many times. They don't care about you. This is just another example. The US is in this, they're in this weird kind of period where like they're trying to tell you that they're doing everything they can to make things better. But you know, the money is telling you something different. I don't know if you've seen this chart. I can't remember where I got this from, but the Fed funds rate futures right now, you know, the rate of interest right now is about 4.5%, Len. Do you know what the expectation is for this time, this month, let's say next year?
Higher. It's going to be 5.25, probably.
3.2.
So a lot, quite a difference.
Oh. Cuts.
Well,
cuts.
Where are they going to cut?
That's probably two cycles of cuts.
Because they're going to be raising this time, they're going to raise probably again early Q1.
Sorry, excuse me. The rate right now is not 4.2. I made a mistake there. The rate right now is not 4.5. The rate right now is, I think, is maybe a little under that. So they think it's going to be
3.75 or something.
They think it's going to be 4.5 this time next year, and in 2024 it's going to be 3.2. So they're going to go through they're going to shave off a little shy of 50% of their interest rate work a year after they finish. Like that, like we talked about before, the gap between these policy measures, the gap between the incidents, it's shrinking all the time. And it's funny, you know, I keep on hearing from the climate folks. I'm not going to debate climate change tonight, but I keep on hearing from the climate folks that the thing I need to be concerned about is when these disasters get more and more frequent and more severe. Well, here we are in the financial world where we're seeing exactly that. And we're being told that nothing is wrong. Everything is under control. We got a problem. The reason that I like Bitcoin more and more every day, okay, much like you just mentioned during your spiel, the number of people, like the European Central Bank, for them to put out a paper about Bitcoin's road to irrelevance at a time when they are struggling to keep the wheels on, careening down the highway, that's a signpost, big signpost there. The number of people pulling coins off exchanges instead of just dumping everything they have, big signpost there. The number of people dissatisfied with the nature of their economic outlook thanks to their government, their investment broker, their bank, their whatever, their job opportunities, their education, that's growing. That's a signpost. The way out of this sort of peaceful protest we've been talking about for the longest time now is Bitcoin. It's a self-fulfilling kind of outcome. You don't like what you got. You start buying this other thing. You learn about the problems in the other system that you always knew but couldn't quite articulate. And then you become a node for Bitcoin. You hold it yourself. Okay. The custody is important. No one can take it from you. No one can inflate it away. I am dumbfounded by the commentary here about Bitcoin is not a cash flowing asset. It doesn't matter if the cash that's flowing is becoming worthless by the day. It doesn't matter. You can tell me about cash flow all you want, but the fact of the matter is, in the best of cases, the cash has to decrease in value by quote unquote 2%. Okay. Really, we think it's probably much higher than that, generally speaking. But you know, in the system that's working as designed, you're losing 2% a year. Who wants that? Nobody wants that. We're going to talk a bit about the Canadian situation in a bit, but I'll tell you right now, man, if you think the American situation is bad and you're like, man, I can't believe more Americans aren't buying Bitcoin, wait until you hear what we got going on up here, because I'm telling you, man, there's not enough red noses in the world to really get a grasp on the clown world level stuff going on in this country. It is crazy. I think there's an opportunity here for people who are interested in becoming a node for other Bitcoiners to march under this banner. Okay. you don't even have to lead with Bitcoin anymore. You did in 2017, 18, 19. Oh, it's scarce. It's this, it's that, transactionable, you know, fungible, whatever. Now, you don't even have to lead with that. You can say, look at your life. Look at your grocery bill. Look at your house. Look at your job. Look at your bank account. Look at your investment portfolio. Look at Pelosi. Okay. Look at the people who are telling you things are fine. They're crushing it, man, but you're not. And they're trying to tell you that you are, and they're trying to tell you things are fine. And they're trying to tell you they got things under control. They don't. Let me start there. Take that in, absorb that. And then let's talk about how you can get out of this. Let's talk about the 1% allocation. Let's talk about the 5% allocation. It's never been easier to start somewhere else. And I think that's a hurdle that Bitcoiners had to deal with for a long time. For a long time, we had to deal with that. And now these guys are doing the work for us. I think we've talked about this before, and I'll leave it here. Whether or not you're bullish on Bitcoin for Bitcoin-related reasons, you know, you like the transaction speed, you like that it's uncensorable, fine. Okay, those are good things, but it's not enough for a lot of people. I think that more people are going to find that the institutional failures at the highest levels of the most modern, democratic, well-regarded, you know, till now, governments are enough to drive them into another asset class. I think we're there. You have any thoughts on that? You think that's a, you know, is that the right approach now? I think that it very well may be.
Sure. Put a small amount of your allocation of your budget towards buying Bitcoin. Certainly makes sense. If you think that the fiat currencies that we live and operate on a daily basis is going to fail, something has to come out and rise up from the ashes, and it's probably going to be Bitcoin. It seems like it's got a track record here. It hasn't been down, like the network itself hasn't been down for almost a decade. Just seems very secure. The code, you could easily audit. You could determine who has, if you have Bitcoin, it is indeed in your wallet and you could easily spend it. Nobody else could take it away from you as long as you have your keys that are secure. And it's a no-brainer, but it's easy for us to say because we're Bitcoiners. And a lot of other people, they look at this and say, this is magic internet money. It's hard for them to grasp it. But the reality is we operate in a digital world. My Canadian dollars, I haven't really touched Canadian dollars, the physical one. I have some in my wallet just in case my card fails when I go fill up my car. But the reality is I don't transact in physical dollars. Everything is all digital. So the idea of using digital dollars and using Bitcoin, there's not a far gap here. It seems rather easy to bridge the gap here. But with respect to the US dollar, I just want to say that, yeah, we'll talk about Clown World North in a moment. And so much interesting stuff is going on over here. And Saifedean has mentioned it many times that all other currencies, they are simply just derivatives of the US dollar. You could almost look at them as layer two solutions to the US dollar. And all the problems that we are experiencing here and also other countries is due to the currency itself that is, unfortunately, are going through some really hard times. And yeah, watching the European Central Bank just rail in Bitcoin, I love it. It's just shaking in their boots. And
people are led by someone who is a financial, convicted financial criminal.
I was like, what are we going to say about? That is, a criminal. Somebody that I don't want to go too far into this, but they talk about it doesn't have cash flow properties like real estate. It's such a fiat mentality. And they look at this and say, if this thing isn't continually expanding and we could create some new policies just to create some more money or more Bitcoin, it just doesn't work because they're locked in that environment. That's all they know. That's all they believe in. And it's hard for them to grasp something that has
it works for them. Right. They're close to the spigot, like you keenly put earlier.
And Bitcoin with a hard number, it's very difficult to grasp and to operate with that environment. Even then, when I think about it, thinking about governments transitioning towards that, I think that's going to be a real, real challenge to have them adopt Bitcoin in some manner. But I don't know. I just want to say one last thing. You were talking about the stock market that is they perceive it to be the economy. Think about this too. With low rates, and we've had low rates for a long period of time, it effectively took the bond market out of the equation. So if you are trying to allocate any money into bonds, well, you shouldn't do that because everything is just, you know, you're not getting a good return. So the stock market became the pseudo bond market because you had this return, this almost guaranteed return through the stock market that you had for a long period of time. And it just replaced the bond market. So everybody was parking their money rather not in bonds, but in the stock market. And it made sense. I could understand the rationale. So that's why they're looking at that as being the economy, because there's so much riding on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's move on. What's going on in our whole country? Okay. Anything good?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Well, let's just go to Clown World North. So this is the official transition to that side of the show. Generation Squeeze, and this is a charitable organization fighting for generational fairness in our country. They have come up with a report that shows Ontario millennials, they need to save for over 20 years for a down payment on a home. The house prices in Canada, yeah, they've dropped, and they dropped quite a bit, but still, you need more than $500,000 to buy a home in Ontario, in some cases quite a bit more. In fact, the average home price is $900,000 in all of Ontario. So it's gone up. The price of homes has gone up quite a bit, even though it's gone down a little bit in the past year or so. And the average Ontarian, they're between the age of 25 and 34, their average income has remained the same. They've been roughly earning around $50,000 a year over the past decade or so. So price of homes have gone up quite a bit in the past few decades. The earning power of these people has remained the same. And well, unfortunately, the thought of owning a home is just a dream that's probably never going to be fulfilled. And it's really sad. And it's just the nature of the beast we're dealing with. Just Canadian dollar, unfortunately, is not worth what it used to be. And let this one sink in. We talked about this before, but the Bank of Canada lost the number $522 million for the third quarter. $522 million. It's a lot of money. So I'm thinking that Forbes should come out with an article and talk about that the people running the Bank of Canada are financial gurus, because they only lost $522 million after all. And if Carolyn lost $9 billion as a financial guru, well, these guys have to be just multitudes better than Carolyn is. But I don't know. Canada's GDP for quarter three came in 0.7% in the positive. They were expecting 0.4%, so quite a bit higher. It was the actual versus the expectations. The two main contributors for the GDP growing was inventory builds and government spendings.
Amazing. Amazing.
So inventory builds, so just replenishing what's been lost because of what happened, and then government spending. So these two things did non-sustainable. And if you take these two things out of the equation, it's quite likely we would have a negative GDP growth for quarter three. In fact, household spending fell for the first time since the second quarter of 2021. And it's, you can know what happened back then. We were coming out of some real problems. And how much longer are we going to be having these things? And we're not going to hear, or we will be hearing, what UBI. In fact, MP Mark Garrison, if previous No Coiner of the Week, he was on Twitter explaining he's a Liberal MP, so he's in the government. He's talking about it makes sense for UBI to exist on all levels of government, and it's even now needed more than ever to provide urgent need and urgent financial security to all Canadians. This is scary stuff. When they talk more about UBI, it's money that's coming out of our pockets and going into somebody else's. This is not what we should be looking at. Anyways, economic growth for quarter three. It was good because there was increase in exports, non-residential structures, and business investment in inventories, as I talked about. But the rise in exports, what was the cause of this? It was an increase in crude oil. And this is what's going out. Our energy is making up the bulk of our exports. And we shouldn't be villainizing our energy. We should be grasping it and making this, putting it on a pedestal and making this as part of our centerpiece for our economy. And on a quarterly basis, the nominal compensation for employees rose 1.2%, and it marks the slowest growth in compensation since the second quarter of 2020. So people are getting paid less and less. Something else that's growing at a slower pace than planned is the Canadian Armed Forces. And in fact, they're struggling to have people recruit and join up the forces. General Wayne Eyer, he's the chief of defense staff for the Canadian Armed Forces. He estimates that the forces were short-staffed by 10,000 members. This is a decent number considering the size of our military. They have right now an annual attrition rate of 3% that's deemed to be, quote, normal, end quote. They're facing right now 5% shortages at all times. That means some jobs right now are going vacant for over a year. which is incredible considering the fact that our army is here to secure our borders. Keep in mind, Canada's interest payments on a debt is now $48 billion. This is double the military budget. So think about that. Our military is struggling, but the interest on our payment for the for our debt, just the interest, is double our
Why doesn't the military just cancel Disney Plus? Have they done that?
I don't know if that's enough. They probably have to do Netflix as well.
We got to find out. That. We got to find out then. Call them. Give them a call. Can we invite them on?
I don't know if we can. And people wonder why we Bitcoin. But really, one thing Bitcoin won't fix is the shortages of medicine. Pharmacists are asking parents to not stockpile as shortages of kids' pain medicine continues. And the federal government imported 1 million units of children's Tylenol. And unfortunately, this is not going to last very long, given the demand right now seen across Canada. How screwed up are things out there, man? It's absolutely nuts. In fact, new hires, get this, are ghosting small businesses that are currently under pressure from labor shortages. Around 80% of people who apply for jobs don't even show up for the interview process. And a similar percentage of new hires quit or fail to come to work shortly after starting the job. And that puts a huge amount of pressure on these businesses out there, these small businesses who then have to try to make ends meet with a smaller staff. And it's causing, you know, real labor shortages, and they can't keep up with the challenges that are presented to them today. So businesses, they have to pivot. In fact, some are that were open 7 days a week before are now only open five, or some that used to be open for late for three nights a week are only open for one. But this is the last one I want to talk about. We all heard about this story, retired Corporal Christine Gauthier. And she competed in the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Paralympics. And she's fighting now and has been for the past little while to have a wheelchair lift installed at her home. And because she is a former corporal, and she's able to access the services of Veteran Affairs. And while she's approached them, and a Veteran Affairs caseworker has offered in writing to provide her with a medically assisted dying device. And this
what is a medically assisted dying device?
Like, I don't know. And I do not even want to joke about this, because it's absolutely stupid that somebody would even consider such an option for this lady here. So Miss Gauthier, she's trying to raise money, and I would love to get in touch with her. In fact, I'm going to have to email Canada Paralympics to see if I could try to get in touch with her. I'd like to donate a small amount of Bitcoin to her cause, and hopefully that'll be enough for her to have her wheelchair lift installed in her home. But for somebody to come up like this and say that this is the best option available to you, this is embarrassing as not just a Canadian, but as a human being. How could you even propose such an option to somebody? And I'm not sure if you've seen pictures of her, but man, she, like, her arms, her shoulders absolutely ripped. Like, she was, and I'm not sure if she still is, but at the time when she participated in the Paralympics, she was in really good shape. For somebody to have represented Canada, not just at the Olympics, and these are people, and I'm not here to say, like, I like watching the Olympics. I haven't watched the Olympics in quite a long time. It's ditto with the Paralympics. So, but I have to respect the fact that they put in a lot of time and effort. They sacrificed a lot to get there and to do what they have to do. Not just that, she also put up her body to go into the armed forces. She was a corporal for, you know, that is a relatively high rank in the grand scheme of things. So she spent enough time in there. She's dedicated enough time for this country. And for somebody to say that she's going to have to, unfortunately, pass away as a result of her problems, give me a break. In fact, I'm just going to end it here. The same day I got this story, I saw it show up on my feed. There was a tweet sent out by Trudeau. Now, keep in mind the story I just said, and I'm going to quote the tweet by Trudeau. He said, "When persons with disabilities have the same opportunities as everybody else, we build stronger communities and a stronger country. Today, let's recommit to making our country a more inclusive, equitable, and accessible place to call home." Incredible that this tweet came out on the same day that came out from retired Corporal Christine Gauthier. I'm embarrassed as a human being. It's so sad.
Pretty brutal. The MAID thing. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. It is the definition of third world. New York Times even has an article today, you know, that this is like really sort of neoliberal rot. You know, I need a chairlift. Well, have you considered just dying instead? Maybe dying is the answer. Former Paralympic, former military servant, Like it's unbelievable, but we'll, you know, we'll leave that there. Canada is in a lot of trouble. Okay. I feels like I've been doomed, you know, naysaying on this show for the last like month, but it's hard to ignore. Okay. RBC. And this is all the big banks have this, what do you call it? Maybe like a fund, like a slush fund, safety fund, something like that, where they make an assumption or a guess about how many dollars in bad loans you're going to have for the fiscal year. RBC has $400 million in that fund this year.
That's so little.
There's four or five big banks that, you know, if you include HSBC, I guess, which RBC just bought, but there's four or five big banks in Canada. And if all of them only have about $400 million or $500 million, you know, you said it there before I even asked you the question. It doesn't seem like enough, almost, you know? It doesn't seem like quite enough. But the fact that they even have that much money is pretty telling. I wish I had done a little digging into the trend of those slush accounts. Like how much money do they usually have? And is this more or less than that amount, given the economic hardships people are dealing with? I don't know. I do know that people are, you know, they're spending more. They're earning less, probably. You know, some of them are facing problems with hourly jobs, for example. You know, by design, the bank, you know, does want to crush demand and is trying to do that through interest rate hikes. They're getting walloped by inflation. Variable rate mortgages are all coming to renewal. Steve Saretsky on the Dollar or Looney Hour, and he's not the only one saying this, but he says it most often. Like the stress test now is like 7.5%. For people, like if you got a stress test of 7.5% when your mortgage renews, good luck. If you
it doesn't happen at renewal. It's only for
when you're buying a house. Like good luck. You're gonna have a problem if you renew and you signed 2 years ago at 2% and you're renewing at 5. Good luck. You know, like or higher even. Good luck. That's gonna create tons of pressure points that we are starting to see now. But the remedy, you know, for these things. When only one of those things is wrong at a time, the remedy is difficult to apply. But when all of them are wrong at once, it's even harder. To make things worse, CAD is down against the US dollar about 10% since June, which is like pretty fucking high. It's like 82 to 74 cents. You know, we've talked about this, but the dollar, the loonie is successful because we have this energy or these perceived energy backing to our currency. But we're unwilling to use it, and it's causing a lot of pressure on our currency as the dollar continues to rip, which is also by design. The dollar is going to bulldoze global markets. We talked about this too. They're not going to stop. They care about themselves, right? This is the Triffin dilemma, that domestic policy eventually collides with international policy when you're the reserve currency. This is just the nature of things in global markets. And the people running the US dollar hegemony don't care if GBP or the euro or the loonie get smacked and the populations over there get smacked. They're protecting number one, as they should, by the way, as they should. But we're all going to suffer the consequences for that. The other thing I want to remind people of is we talked on this show a little while ago about the importance that currency has when you have an aging demographic. You cannot, okay, have cheap currency as your population gets older. You need your currency to be strong because you have to bring in exports. Okay. You have to import things, I should say. And so when you're importing things, if your dollar's weak, it's not going to work. You don't have the labor. You don't have the manufacturing to produce things domestically because your labor force is aging out. And you can't have a weak dollar, a weak loonie, I should say, for those periods. So we're going to have that problem. You mentioned GDP going up, and I'm glad you did because I have an interesting thing here that I got from Rich Diaz. Retail sales per capita, okay, adjusted for inflation, has been flat since 2018. That's not flat now compared to 2018. That's flat for 4 years, okay? Hasn't moved in 4 years. We've been bringing in, I think we said somewhere between 450 and 490,000 people per year.
That's just this past year. No. Before that, it was like 300 or a little bit less. It's only ramped up this past year.
So let's say the population went up by, you know, did it go up by 10% in the last 4 years? 3 million? That's about 3
no.
million, two and change, something like that.
No.
Do the math. If you brought in 300,000 in 2018, okay?
Times four, that's 1.2.
But it wasn't times four. You brought in almost 500,000 last year. So so let's say you brought in two
million. We'll say 1.5.
I think it's 1.5 to 2. Okay, let's say 2 million. you brought in all those people, your retail sales stayed the same. Now, if that was the only thing, okay, if the only problem was that you brought in all those people and retail sales stayed the same, that would be one thing. But then you factor in the craziest bull market in housing this country's ever seen, okay? The craziest run-up in equities that we've ever seen. Our neighbors to the south over the same period, that same number going up by about 20% with significantly less immigration compared to their current population. And now we got a problem with the housing market dropping. The average house price in Canada is off about 15%, something like that. I saw on Better Dwelling. That's not in all the major urban centers. It's probably more than that in the major urban centers. But, you know, the fact of the matter is the wealth effect is reversing now, okay? The wealth effect is reversing. We're still bringing tons of people in. That number is going to go up. And so it's easy to wash negative stats, let's say, negative figures with things like monster immigration numbers. The GDP is going up, as you mentioned. It's easy for the GDP to go up when government spending counts in the GDP bag and you're spending it on more and more people. It's easy for it to go up when more people are spending money, but you can't hide the per capita spending flat. You can't hide that. That's terrible, terrible stuff. Ritesh said this on our show too, that the country has become a country of unproductive people, period. It's very difficult to dispute that. We don't produce any energy. We don't have a burgeoning tech sector. We don't have a great entrepreneur class. Where is the production coming from? The fact of the matter is there is none. Not only that, but because of shortcomings and stuff like healthcare, like you mentioned, education, like we've talked about, because of a non-competitive conservative party at the moment, and for the last 10 years, we've got a significant problem with policy rot as well. You can agree or disagree on that, but the fact of the matter is democracies do better when there is competition at the top. And right now, for the last decade, we haven't had any. And it shows.
Hasn't been since 2005.
And it shows. And it shows. And so, you know, what is the effect of something like that? Well, you see what it is. It's extended spending programs. It's, you know, thinly veiled vote buying. The Monk Debates has a great, great hour and a half for free on the podcast feed about the mainstream media being trustworthy or not. And in there, you have a British guy at an American debate platform talking about our media being funded by the government. You should be ashamed of that, anonymous Canadian. You should be mad about that. Everyone looks at this country and laughs. I tweeted this the other day, and I'll say it again now. The biggest lie we've been fed is that we have some kind of moral, ethical, or other high ground on our neighbors to the south because of our coveted healthcare, our melting pot cultural, cultural absorption mechanism. It's bullshit. It's bullshit. We're in trouble, okay? And the numbers show we are in trouble. We don't have the reserve currency like our buddies to the south. We don't have a military, like my co-host so astutely pointed out. We don't have a cultural identity. We are as divided as ever politically with no competition for the ruling party at the moment and no path out except for if you cancel your Disney Plus membership. Real advice offered at a time of incredible turmoil for Canadian families, regardless of income level. 90% of Canadian families got that advice. You got nothing to be proud of. Zero to be proud of as a Canadian at the moment. This is why it's important to find a clan, okay? To find a group of sane people who you can speak openly with and find solutions in your community, in your family, in your household unit, in your friend group. Get good advice. Talk to people who are doing the right things because your media and the people that are elected and could be elected, I'm including the conservatives in there, okay? These people are not going to help you. They are not going to help you. This system is in trouble. We don't have the same safety mechanisms, the same safety, the same safety net that the US does. We don't have it, okay? There is no military coming to backstop you. There is no, reserve currency backstopping your economic decline. It ain't there, man. It ain't there. We need a real change here. It's not just in the political class. It's in society too. There is a rot that is starting to show. The fact that we are offering veterans medically assisted suicide, okay? The fact that we are considering mature minors, giving them the opportunity to choose medically assisted death, giving people who suffer from mental illnesses as a primary and sole issue this option, giving people 12 hour, 16 hour, 20 hour waits in hospitals, okay? Your healthcare is not free. It just fucking sucks. You get what you pay for, as they say, okay? These are difficult things to talk about, but you as a Bitcoiner, whether you can articulate that those problems or not, you know they're there. You understand they're there because you understand the money doesn't work, because you understand that the incentives are broken. And this is the result. This is not that hard to figure out. When you give everything away for free, somebody pays. You either pay with a decline in the quality of service, a decline in the quality of professional you see, a decline in the quality of education you or your children, heaven forbid, receive, a decline in the quality of discourse you can engage in with your neighbors, with your colleagues, with your peers, your friends, your family. Nothing is free. The declines are everywhere, and they're showing now. This is not a debatable point anymore, okay? Like I said, for Douglas Murray, who's a European guy, I think he's British, for him to be on Monk Debates talking about the distrust in gen pop of media, and to bring up our media and the tax receipts they get, the tax incentives they get from our government, and the coverage of things like that, the coverage of things like that breed, it's embarrassing, man. And Bitcoiners, you know this to be true. And so the question is, and will continue to be, how do you talk to your friends and family about this? How do you build your tribe? How do you extend your clan, right? How do you bring in people, quality people, to talk about these things? We try and do it on the show. I know you guys try and do it in the chat. I get a lot of messages from you guys about this kind of thing. How do you do it, Len? I don't know. What is the way to make people see the light? We talked about this before, and so I'll ask you again this week. If they don't see it now, when are they going to see it?
In Canada, it's hard for them to see it. You talked about the distrust in media. Ask any normie that you find in the street and ask if they have any distrust with the media. And I suspect you probably have more people will probably say they trust it. They listen to CBC, CBC, you name it. And they don't take anything with a grain of salt. I think that people still believe a lot what they read, a lot what they hear. And that's sad. I could be wrong in my assessment, but the fact that they still exist, these entities, and I know a lot of them are governmentally funded, but they're getting ad revenue from somewhere. It's because eyeballs are watching it and people are clicking their websites and their links and so forth. So they're getting money from somewhere, from ads.
I don't know.
So people are reading it. So,
the rot is everywhere. From an economics point of view here, to bring it back from the cliff, this is going to culminate in Bank of Canada action this week. I think the 6th or 7th, they have their rate decision, right? Everyone's talking about what the rate hike is going to be. It's going to be 50, it's going to be 75, it's going to be 25. I don't know. All those, things we just talked about, okay? The GDP numbers being flat, housing is way off, wealth effect is way off, trigger rates are going up like crazy. Not to mention that Powell now is starting to speak a little more dovishly next door. What's the bank going to do this week? What do you think? 50, 75, 25? They did 50 last time. Market wanted 75. They did 50. What do you think they're going to do this week?
I suspect you're going to do another 25 or another 50 at the very least, and probably 25 is the other alternative. I can't really see 75 given what I'm seeing right now. And if they're going to do 75, why didn't do it last time? They should have done it last time if they're truly trying to correct this problem. And you mentioned it earlier when the fact that all these corrections they're making, they may overcorrect. And then it's like a ship, a very, very large ship, what they're trying to steer here. Everything's got to be done with a lot of foresight. And they're not doing that. If you're doing it all reactionary, well, you're going to hit an iceberg. And here we are, and we're just taking in water and slowly sinking, actually quickly sinking. But and another thing I want to touch upon, you talked about Canada, about where our production comes from. same applies to the United States. We've offshored a whole bunch of production because cheap goods come from somewhere else, and we're happy to buy those cheap goods. Trade deficits is good for only a short period of time. Like, you do it for a long period of time, you're screwed. You can't continually keep sending money abroad and expect to live the same quality of life and your dollar maintain parity with purchasing parity that it used to have in the past. Is impossible. Something has to give. Like I said, we're all waiters or baristas. That's all we are. I'm tongue in cheek, but it's the reality of it. Like, what the hell do we produce? Energy should be our biggest thing. Yeah. When I mentioned it earlier, Canada, we're blessed by that. Not just that, fresh water, so many natural resources that we could not exploit, but just use to our advantages. But we're not. And no. It's sad because, you know, we're going to put up windmills. We're going to put up solar panels.
It's almost unbelievable. Like, you can honestly barely even get the words out, right? Like, you cannot believe you're saying them. Oil rich, resource rich. What are we doing? Well, we're putting in legislative problems for people who want to do this stuff. Danielle Smith, the new premier of Alberta, you can like her or not. I don't really care what you think about her as a politician. Yeah, I don't know if she's competent, but I do know that Alberta, you know, is getting the short end of the stick at every turn. And they, you know, that's a province that was sending their citizens checks basically every year for a long time because of the surplus they had thanks to energy production. And now they're being villainized. Regularly. It's like, again, in the media, it's become an acceptable target. Well, Danielle Smith, she's incompetent, or she's, you know, anti, you know, the word, or she's, not medically competent or whatever, right? Whatever the parlance of the day is, whatever the favorite thing of the deplatforming elite is that day, they will fire it at you and use every loudspeaker and megaphone they have that they've paid for to make it stick. And like, you're just supposed to sit there and be like, yeah, I guess I'll just pay more for my hydro this month. They're like, yeah, I guess I'll just take a cut in my hours this week. Or yeah, I guess I'll just, you know, pay triple what I was a year ago for 3 heads of romaine lettuce, which is what I'm paying at Fortino's now. Like, yeah, I guess I'll just do all those things. And then what's the plan when we can't figure out I said this before. I said this in a private chat, but I'll say it here. Okay. I don't know if this gets us in trouble, but whatever. Fuck it. In 10 years or 20 years, okay, let's say 20 years from now, when the youngest boomers are in their 90s, let's say, and, you know, guys like me are about to retire. You're retired now, but you'll be at least officially retired by then.
I'll be good.
Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, by that time, What is the plan? I want you to think about this dystopian hellscape I'm going to paint for you right now. You got a ton of kids, okay, who are being prescribed God knows what kind of stimulants and downers, uppers, because they can't keep their attention for more than 10 seconds. And instead of working on those skills, they got a pill for it. You got a bunch of parents who aren't really competent themselves and had kids during economic booms that they couldn't handle during economic downturns. That's the best case scenario. There's probably a more harsh way to put that, but I the words are not coming to me at the moment. What is the plan to fund the pension system, the entitlement system, the healthcare system, the education system, when your workforce is just a bunch of kids who are constantly medicated for production? What's the plan? You think that's going to work? There's no control group for that. There's no control group for 10-year-olds going through 20 years of stimulant use, prescribed or otherwise, becoming a successful workforce. There is no control group. We can't rely on these sorts of things. But this is the situation we've gotten ourselves into. And there's
that's why we're bringing in 500,000 immigrants every year. That's going to be
good luck. I just saw that we're also giving those immigrants, their families, a direct route to the country as well. Now, do you think, this is the other question, right? Like, do you think that the people who need the family card to get in are going to be really productive members of society as far as supporting entitlements for a population that's growing at 10% or sorry, not 10%, at 5%, 4% a year?
So the people they're bringing in, I mean, the family, if it's going to be spouse or child, initially you'd expect them to not.
It's not Spells for Child. It's
because they, over time they would be contributors to the society. If it's something outside that, if you're talking about parent or grandparent, then probably not. They're probably going to be a net user than a net giver. Because they're going to, you know, they're older and they're going to need healthcare and
yeah.
and so forth. They're probably yeah. not going to work and pay taxes to the same degree that, you know, a spouse would or a child would over time after they finish schooling. So I don't know. I'm not sure what a breakdown is. I don't know. Canada's built on immigration. It has been forever.
I'll say it right now. It's not a sustainable model. It is not a sustainable.
Eventually, you have to change something, but there's still enough landmass. There's still enough resources you could tap
like we don't. This is the other thing, right? So the landmass thing is important too. The density, the population density. These immigrants, and it's not just immigrants doing this. Okay, Canadians do this too. People who are born in the sticks don't stay in the sticks. They move to urban centers, and then those urban centers are overpopulated. They can't support 2 million people. Okay, 3 million people in Toronto's case. They can't support it. So what do you do? There's no incentive for them to move out to Saskatchewan. I remember when I was an undergrad.
There is. There's faster immigration.
Is there still incentives there? When I was an undergrad, there was an incentive that said if you graduated from a Canadian university with an undergrad degree, 3 or 4 year, you could move to Saskatchewan. If you stayed for 5 years, they'd put your down payment and they'd pay for half your education.
Yeah, so I remember that something that would fast track stuff if you're going to go to different provinces, but also the province of Quebec does things separately too. So I'm throwing them outside of this whole scenario because I'm not sure how the heck they do it. But yeah, at least I remember calling in the past there were, you know, much more they incentivized you to go somewhere else than rather than go say to the GTA or Greater Vancouver area where I'm.
But there's no political will for that, right? And like. I don't know. How do you manufacture political will without an independent press? You can't. Whatever the policy is, that's what comes down the pipe. That's what gets spun up. That's what gets fed out. And you can't change. It is so hard, even in a perfectly free media environment, to change the political mores of a population. But goddamn, man, when people are worried about the money they're spending on food, and the press is just feeding them the same shit. They're never going to change. They are never going to change. And then when you like add said, that yeah, social programming that like, oh, I need another check this quarter. I need another rebate this quarter. Like you had Minister Reagan, yeah, talking about, oh, well, this tax credit is going to put more money in the bank accounts of Canadians. Who fucking cares what the number is, man? It doesn't buy anything anymore. $200 doesn't get me anything. It's a week of groceries. Whoop-dee-doo. Like it's not enough, but the problem is that no matter how insignificant the sum, when you need it badly enough, you'll do anything to get it, and that's how you get stagnant politically. And we're there. I think we're there. You agree we're there too since 2005. I would have said 2010, but 2005 was, you know,
because at that point 2005 there was a Liberal Party at that time. They were basically done. They ran their course. They had 12 years of.
Was that the Ignatieff year?
No, 2010 was Ignatieff's election. 2011, sorry, was Ignatieff's election. 2005, Paul Martin ran and lost. He ran in 2004 and 2005, or 2006, sorry. It was a winter election. Then 2 years after was Stéphane Dion. Marcel Dion's the hockey player. Stéphane Dion ran a couple of years later. And you know what? At that time, I'm just going to go off on a tangent here. One of the big things he wanted to bring into existence, and people were very, very upset at the time, was a carbon tax. At the time, in 2008, this is something that ruffled a lot of people's feathers, and here we are, we have it. And people are much more accepting of it than they did 14 years ago. People's mentality changed in a very short period of time. It's incredible.
With the right messaging, yeah, and the right consistency and the right, you know, density of uniform messaging, of course. Yeah, anything is possible then. But
I just want to say one thing though. The military, and this is going to be the big one. I'm not saying it's imminent, but as long as you have the military on your side, you're okay. And I'm not trying to say that the military is ever going to turn, but if you think about it, if you're not paying them well, the money is being devalued. Eventually, the people that are there, they're either not going to want to work or they're going to turn their back to the people that are serving them. And that's going to be a real problem. Not just that, also police forces. And you've seen this time and time again in third world countries. That's when you things are really going to get bad. I think if we ever get to that point, we'll be knowing that something is going to shit is going to hit the fan. But that's the big one. When the military turns their back on their masters, that's going to be a real problem. I don't know. That's my two cents.
Buddy, when that happens, that episode of the CBP is going to be lit. But until then.
So a lot of streets because there'd be fires and everything burning away. But let's move on. I want to talk about Ledin. They announced there's some changes for the month of December. So they changed their loan rates, their loan interest rates. They've been increasing to 9.9%. And because everything else is going up, they have to do that as well. It's just for doing business. They also announced that their tiered for Bitcoin and USD is going to remain the same. So for Bitcoin, it's going to be 6% APY up to 0.1% and 2% APY and balances over 0.1 BTC. And all USDC is going to be 8% APY, no tiers. So really the Bitcoin and USDC, no changes there, but it's the loans that are going to be increasing. So keep an eye out. If you do have a loan with Ledin, you're going to be paying more every year to service that loan. And that's just, cost of doing business these days.
Is what it is, man. Let's see, whatever. I don't know. What can I say? I'm not saying, in fact, I'm not going to say anything. I'm interested in seeing how all this, how all these things shake out. I think, not that I think Ledin is a good candidate for a contagion issue. I don't. But as these, other services disappear, even if Ledin maintains, keeps his head above water, with more and more people on the platform using those interest-bearing accounts, I think it'll be hard to maintain that level of interest. Unless I'm, miscalculating something there. So let's see. I mean, this is a good time to reevaluate your risk profile, your position size, all that stuff when you're using those platforms. So I don't know. Good. It is good to see through all this that they've been very, very transparent. You can't ask for much more. I mean, we'll talk a bit about what it looks like to not do well talking to people during a time of crisis, during the Bitcoiner of the Week segment, but, Maurizio and the boys over there, no problem.
Manitoba, they have enacted an 18-month memorandum for new Bitcoin mining. And unfortunately, if you have a new application or an application you submitted to have a Bitcoin mining operation set up in Manitoba, you have to wait now 18 months before they can even consider it. And they have received up to 4.6 gigawatts of requests for miners to be connected to the grid. That's waiting to be installed on their grid, 4.6 gigawatts. The whole Manitoba hydro capacity is 6.1 gigawatts. So just waiting to be installed is going to really tax their system right now. So I can understand why they're doing that. But I also took a look into see if they are giving EV tax credits. And Manitoba is $5,000 they're giving out for tax rebates for buying an EV. So it looks like they don't want to see Bitcoin miners hooked up to their grid, but they're more than happy to see electric cars hooked up to their grid. I'm not against electric cars. Actually, if I had the opportunity, I'd like to purchase one. I think they're rather cool and everything, but I'm going to stick with my 21-year-old car for the time being. But what I'm trying to get at is they're closing up more towards electric cars, which I don't think they have the capacity to have everybody transition to electric cars rather than have Bitcoin mining operations set up in Manitoba. So that's what's going on. I suspect this is going to be a problem coming out moving forward in Canada. Quebec has already done something similar to this. Now Manitoba. This might be the attack on Bitcoin, not a direct attack, but indirectly to mining operations. So keep your eyes open for this.
How long did you say the delay was?
18 months.
Okay, and what exactly is the nature of that delay? Do you know?
They're waiting just to see. I suppose in 18 months, they're going to reassess to see if they are able to handle, their grid is able to handle those mining operations plugged into the grid. So right now, their total output that their capacity to have is 6.1 gigawatts, which is a fair bit of energy. But 4.6 gigawatts are waiting right now in applications to be installed. So really, it's not sustainable. They're not able to plug in more Bitcoin mining operations on their grid. But I don't think they're able to plug in too many cars as well. Not that Manitoba is a vastly populated province, but still, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole.
This is sort of an example, though, of what we were saying earlier, right? Like, where's the infrastructure for growth there? You know, like whether it's Bitcoin mining or something else, a hospital, a university, whatever, you know, like we're without infrastructure, no one's coming. And I know there's, you know, I am sure in civil engineering circles, there's, you know, some discussion about chicken and egg. You know, what do? We build out the infrastructure first or do we wait for demand to show up first? I don't know the answer to that.
It's always build out and then you don't go through brownout periods. Not in this neck of the woods.
No.
You have to build out access and then deal with the excess somehow. But don't have a situation where you don't have enough.
That doesn't seem controversial to me. And like, but here we are talking about a place, you know, Manitoba's not none of it. You know what I mean? Like, it's not some remote northern community that's fly-in only. They should know this and do this. Like, there's either not political will or not funding. But in either case...
They did fund some of their infrastructure. They borrowed quite a bit of money, several hundred billion dollars from what I understand, to build out their infrastructure. So they have gone into debt in the past little while to build out more energy capacity.
So I don't know. Like, well, obviously, what did you say? It's not enough. Yeah. It wasn't enough.
Ontario and Quebec are going to be running out of energy in the next decade or so. I mean, we talked about this in the past. And they have to each figure out something to do moving forward because... Well,
can't they just raise the energy ceiling? Isn't that what they do here or no?
Yeah.
I think vote they just on it?
Move the decimal somewhere and then just, oh, look, we have enough energy to help everyone. But like I say, like more and more electric cars are going to be plugged in the grid. Every time I go to swimming, and this is anecdotal evidence, every time I go to my daughter's swimming lessons, there's a section of parking spots that are dedicated for electric vehicles. They're right. Always full. Just full. And to me, that shows that a lot of people are buying electric cars nowadays. And we just don't have the capacity to service all these cars to make sure that they are all topped up. Even if they are plugging in and using energy at night, I don't know if there's
no energy. No, not even close. There's no infrastructure for a national fleet of EVs. Not even close. Yeah, I agree with you there. Yeah.
And not even to consider what's going on with the requirement to mine cobalt and lithium, right, which is another...
Silver as well. All that stuff is, you know, it's
nickel,
yeah,
copper. Yeah. It's anyways, last Canadian story I have is about a company called Blockchain Venture Capital Inc. BVCI. They introduced a CADT stablecoin. And this is the first fully compliant cryptocurrency backed by fiat in Canada and held in custody by With Trust, a federally regulated Canadian financial institution. For every CADT issued, $1 of Canadian dollars is going to be deposited in a custodial account, ensuring that the exchange ratio is always 1-to-1. So they're going to ensure that it's transparent and are able to fund the whole operation. BVC Chain, a public decentralized blockchain that combines the advantages of the Ripple and Ethereum blockchain, is going to be the one that's going to be the base layer from what I understand. And BVCI has also made it easy to settle digital asset transactions with the launch of its BVC Pay application, which can conduct 24-hour real-time settlements of digital assets transaction, blah, blah, blah. So this is the first of its kind. I thought we had one, a liquid CAD we had, but it's not really
on Bull, right?
Sorry?
Is that Bull?
It's on Bull. Like, you have to take advantage, but it's not a traditional stable coin. So this is the first one that we have now. It's Canadian. So I thought it was newsworthy. I don't know. Is this something that's going to be under the eyes of regulators moving forward? Probably, given what has transpired in the past year or so. And I'm curious to see how this one plays out. They say they're going to be fully backed, but you know what? Tongue in cheek. I don't know what the hell's going to happen here. So what are your thoughts on this one, Joey?
Sounds like a scam.
CADT. So I'm not going to be paying you for your services in that anymore. So
you
want actual Canadian dollars, not CADT?
I mean, I'll take anything besides CADT. It's funny. I tried to pay my buddy for the Bills tickets in Bitcoin. He didn't want to take it. You're lost, buddy. These prices, you're lost.
Yeah, what a absolute steal it would have been for him. Yeah, it would have been. Yeah. He could have bought the stadium after this thing would rip. But anyways, yeah. So that's it for the news. I don't really have anything else to talk about. I mean, I have a couple of stories we could touch upon, but it's getting kind of late in this.
Oh my god! Yeah, it's already 8:30. Holy shit!
Yeah, yeah. So we could transition to the Bitcoiner and No Coiner segment of the show. My This is brought to you, sponsored by Tahini's Restaurant, who opened up another store, another location in Orillia, from what I
understand. Tahini's going burr, man.
They are. So yeah, check them out. As Joey always says, it's always a bull market at Tahini's. I have a no coiner, but I don't have a Bitcoiner. How about you?
I got a Bitcoiner of the week. You want to go first? You want me to go first? I'll go first. You go.
Mine is quick. Mine is so quick because we talked about it. It's the veteran affairs person that gave the notice to Christine Gauthier that medically assisted suicide is the path forward rather than funding for a home wheelchair lift. So that person, whoever wrote that letter and signed their name to it, truly a no-coiner, because there's no other way to describe that person. And that person, how could they look at themselves in the mirror every day? I don't understand it. That is just inhumane, and it's just such a sad story. But that's my no-coiner of the week.
Jokes. I only have a Bitcoin of the week, and it's a guy who's, I think, been the no-coiner of the week on this show before, but this week he's done some good work. His name's Frank Shaparo, FinTech Frank, who's the editor-at-large of The Block. This man, okay, sat down with SBF for 2 hours, okay? This jittery con man, and put his feet to the fire for 2 hours. Frank does interviews and gives a platform with a lot of things I think he shouldn't, but I don't run The Block, and I'm not the editor of The Block, and The Block can do whatever they want, and I can criticize them for whatever I want, and they can do it or not do it, whatever. But Frank is the only guy with the expertise, the competence in these sort of DeFi scams to ask the right questions, do the investigating, do the follow-up. The Block broke some of those SBF stories and FTX stories. And I was really impressed, man, with the way that he pushed and pushed and pushed on SBF for 2 hours, telling them like, okay, you're saying this here, but that's not true. That's not true. This is a lie. Or what made you think it was appropriate to buy Robinhood stock with Alameda funds that you got from investor funds? Incredible 2 hours of content if you have time. I listened to it today at 1.3 this morning, 1.3x, because I wanted to get through it before tonight. And man, was it ever worth it. I highly recommend spending some time with that. The podcast is called The Scoop. It's run by The Block, and it is worth it. I'm not going to say the podcast is good. Otherwise, I don't know what other guests they've had. It's, you know, it could be like Bankless for all I know on the other you know, episodes. But this one is really good. And so Frank, for his work, supporting people who really should have gotten support from guys like Andrew Ross Sorkin, but didn't, and from the New York Times, but didn't, and from CNN and NBC, but didn't. For this guy doing that work, man, you know, certainly as a, you know, much more independent fella, my Bitcoin of the week, man, easy pick this week for me.
When I hear Block, I always think of Bloc Québécois, but good pick. Very good pick. So yeah.
He's pushing for Quebec sovereignty. Yeah. When he's not doing reporting. Yeah.
He's a renaissance man. He does everything, and it's good for him. Let's hope he could also push for Canadian energy to be at the forefront of our economy, because we need it. I don't know. Anyways, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed the show.
Thank you for coming. Come to the after show if you haven't been listening on YouTube. Len, we got to tell the people the price of Bitcoin here. We got
a pump. Block.
17,096 US. Hey, yeah. Back above 17, baby. Let's go.
23,185 in Canadian dollars. So that's the show pump for you today. So you love are it. Welcome for everyone that bought into Bitcoin before.
Love it. Take care, everyone. And we'll see you on YouTube.
Yeah, take care.